The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
George Brockler, right back with you here, 710 KNUS. We are going to go to the VIP line right now. Listen, the shooting at Denver East is obviously the story of the day, and it was yesterday, and it will be today, and probably for the rest of this week. There are other things going on under the Gold Dome every single day that impact aspects of this, whether it's the gun control measures that the Dems have launched, or in this particular case, there is a specific bill. It's been talked about and suggested for a long time, but it finally dropped this week. It is House Bill 23, that's because it's 2023-1249. It is called, and it's all in the name, Concerning Measures to Improve Outcomes for Young Children by Replacing Justice Involvement with Community-Based Services. Tons of House sponsorship. There are five members of the state Senate. Of the group, there are two Republicans, one in the House and one in the Senate. In the Senate, it's Cleve Simpson. In the House, it's our next guest, Ryan Armagost. Sir, thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you, George.
First off, Ryan, I don't think you and I have ever talked on the radio before. Of course, I know you. I was a big supporter and fan of yours in the race that you had to take over. This is your first term. But for folks that don't know you, give us your background. Like, first, I always love to know things like, where did you grow up? Where was high school? And then tell us how you ended up making the Herculean, disastrous decision to become a member of the state legislature.
All right. Well, I grew up in La Salle, Colorado, and I went to Valley High School back in the 90s, and that led to me joining the military. I joined the Marine Corps in 95. And
Ryan, why couldn't you get into the Army? What happened?
Well, that's the thing. I actually went to the dark side later on. I'll get to that.
Oh, good for you.
So, yeah, I got out of the Marine Corps in 2001 and came over to the Colorado Army National Guard when I came back to Colorado. And then, Marine Corps Infantry to Army Military Police, and that was where I spent the rest of my career, where I retired in 2017. And during that time, since it was National Guard, I was able to do drug intelligence analysis with the Colorado Army National Guard, working with several local law enforcement agency and drug and gang task forces, and was also able to mentor kids in that aspect, but then got hired on by Larimer County Sheriff's Office in 2010 and retired from that in 2020. And then kind of got politically involved, and that's what led me to the Capitol after the redistricting happened. Saw an opportunity to get more involved politically, and it seemed to, as we know, it seemed to work out. So that's where I'm at here.
Family guy, wife, yeah. Kids, looking for all those. How many kids?
I've got one kid that I know of. He's 17, lives here. He actually goes to school here in Denver. But yeah, I'm divorced now, so just
yeah.
I have four giant dogs.
Just getting a sense, your son, though, goes to public school. That matters. Yeah. All my kids have gone to public school, too. And that's important because not just what happened yesterday, but because of this bill. Now, tell us what 1249 does, because from my reading, and I got to tell you, man, there's so much of this that are problematic for me that I'm just super freaked out about. But it substantially changes a juvenile justice system that we have worked on and overhauled over the past couple decades. What does this bill seek to do?
So this bill, the entire goal is to remove the criminal justice system from kids 12 and younger, which is already an aspect for kids 10 and younger. This raises the age to 12 and younger, but while doing that, it also collaborative management plans or programs are already in place, but this codifies and reinforces the collaborative management programs throughout the state. There are some counties that have it. This would provide in not every county, but at least for rural counties, it would be a regional thing. But to bring kids to a diversion program where they are able to seek, whether it be mental health, intensive treatment plans, whatever it is on a case-by-case basis, that's going to fit for that kid and that situation or incident that it involved.
Who's going to pay for that?
Well, that's the thing. It's going to have to come from funding that we have in place, and otherwise it's going to be a state-funded and county-funded system. But that's the state funding is what we are working on in this bill. So this is something that we are hoping to be able to fund, because obviously our juvenile system is broken. I mean, getting Department of Human Services on board with this is difficult without saying, you know, we can't say you've got to expand this and you've got to make this happen with the money you already have. We obviously are going to have to throw money at it. So on a state level, that's going to be a fiscal responsibility that we're going to have to come up with.
Is that going to be an appropriation, a fiscal note for this bill?
Yes, and we don't know what that is looking like just yet, but we'll have that as soon as the bill's ready to go to committee.
You said that the juvenile justice system is broken. I have my own concerns about it, but my guess for different reasons. What is the data you're looking at that tells you that the current system, as it's applied to 10 to 12-year-olds, is not working?
Well, I can't say that it's for 10 to 12-year-olds. The thing that's not working for 10 to 12-year-olds, in my opinion, or at least by the data, is, I mean, I'm looking at 2021 to 2022, we have an average of 525 children between 10 and 12 who are charged with crimes each year in Colorado. According to the state estimates, those around 3 are charged with felonies, 64 are charged with misdemeanors, 446 charged with juvenile delinquency, and then, you know, 12 or so charged with traffic offenses, stuff like that. So under 13 years admitted to detention, we're talking 2.4 or so percent of new inmates in Colorado Division of Youth Services. The problem we have is there's a rise in crime for juveniles, and obviously juveniles don't just include the 12 and younger. That's all the way up through 17. But when we have kids that are reoffending and the recidivism that we're seeing, if we can't try to stop that at an earlier age, we're doing a disservice to our community, our public safety, and the kids. And my experience working in corrections, I've seen, you know, these adult offenders that you've seen them as well. It's the revolving door. Just, you know, this is all I know. I've been doing this since I was a kid. It's the same. It's a culture. They get into jail, it's a family away from family. So it's just, if we can do something to change something early on at that 12 and younger age to hopefully stop that recidivism before they become teenagers, it's potentially too late. When they're adults, it's definitely too late. We're dealing with those career criminals that are just in that revolving door of institutionalization.
Well, I agree with the idea that we need to do better earlier to try to intervene. But I'll tell you from my standpoint on this, and I've dabbled a little bit in the criminal justice world.
Yes, sir.
What this does is strip away any of the stick related to getting kids and their families into doing the kinds of treatment and engaging in the kind of wraparound services that most of your metro area DA's offices already provide through diversion programs. The reason I asked about the data is I'm just not aware of any data that shows that we're failing through the current process. But and tell me if I'm wrong on this. Right now, a 10 to 12-year-old who commits a crime that gets them into the system, there's a carrot and there's a stick. And the carrot is, we want you to go out there. We want you to stay in school. We want you to get these mental health services. We want you to do all these other wraparound things. We might even get human services involved if there's a DNN type action. But if you don't do these things, there's a level of escalation that can take place. And that escalation includes, well, we might not divert you anymore. Now we might charge you and bring you into the juvenile justice system, which is already so forgiving and so rehabilitative. The chances of someone getting confined or detained are very, very low for juveniles. But all along the way, if you fail to do certain things, you can be held accountable for them, including if there's a protection order. And Ryan, I know you've seen the numbers on this. There are, over the last decade, there have been 2,500 juvenile cases on 10 to 12-year-olds that include things like murder, rape, robbery, burglary, a bunch of other different kinds of sexual assaults. So that's not uncommon. My concern with the bill here is it blows up all of the accountability features that exist in the juvenile justice system right now and exchanges them for meetings. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, and I don't know that folks appreciate this. Describe for them, if you would, what happens to a 12-year-old, and we can take the Denver East example because it's an extreme one, but instead of it being a 17-year-old, let's say it's a middle school, and a 12-year-old brings a gun to school and shoots a teacher, maybe even a couple students, but they all live. How would this bill address that 12-year-old? What happens to that 12-year-old?
Well, I think, first of all, to classify it as a kid has to go to classes to instead of incarceration, that's not the way this bill is written out at all. I don't disagree with you that there are DAs around the state that are doing great things in diversion programs. To get to your question, our only carve-out on this is murder. So if you're talking about a 12 and younger child, you know, these are fourth, fifth, and sixth graders doing acts of violence, any kind of a sexual act, you and I both know there's usually, and by usually, the vast majority of those cases are kids are being victimized either at home or in their own environment somewhere in their family or their environment. So to take those kids and be able to get them, whether it's treatment or removal from a very toxic environment, is potentially the only thing that's going to save them, because we can have them go through a punitive action, a diversion program, and then go right back into that toxic environment where they're being perpetrated on and then acting that out. Otherwise, we're not fixing the problem there either. So I think...
How does this address that, man? If that's your interpretation of it. Like, my understanding is what happens is a police officer shows up, and you stop me if I say anything that's contrary to the bill. 12-year-old goes into school, shoots a teacher, shoots a kid, but they both live. Those are not homicides. Those are attempted homicides. Your bill precludes them from entry into the juvenile justice system for that act. In fact, it precludes the police from arresting him. Even at the scene, all they can do is show up, fill out a form determining that there was probable cause. They give a form to the 12-year-old. They give a form to his parents. They give a form to the victims. And then the police officer leaves because he's only able. Yeah, go ahead. Tell me what language you see in there that says otherwise.
Well, the intent of the bill, whether it's written clearly or not, I mean, if we need to address that, we can. But the intent of the bill is not to tie the hands of law enforcement or make anything unsafe in an act of violence or sexual nature or anything like that. If their child would need to be detained and taken away from a situation for public safety or whatever, that doesn't tie the hands of law enforcement. The only thing this is going to do is once they've been detained, things are determined safe, they're turned over to a program, DHS, whatever the case may be, that's where the diversion happens, is between the law enforcement side and the criminal justice side. So it does not tie the hands of law enforcement on that aspect.
Well, you should take a look at the bill, man, because it prevents temporary detention for just about every single thing except for the safety of the 12-year-old shooter. It does not permit them to remove him from the scene by force or in custody for any other reason. The other thing that happens, though, it looks like to me, man, is that you then say, and by the way, you talked about, hey, we need to have human services involved in the DNA. That already exists. That already works in parallel with the existing juvenile justice system. You're just blowing up the juvenile justice system. The other thing that happens, and this is where I need your input on this, because I read this bill as saying that what happens is, the student, the 12-year-old, and their parents are invited to one of these collaborative management board meetings, but they don't have to show up. And if they don't show up, then they set another meeting, and DHS is invited. But they don't have to show up to that one, too. And if they don't show up to that one, then there's a third meeting. And at the third meeting, there's a decision made about whether DHS will actually pursue a DNN. So at the end of the day, it looks like the absolute worst thing that could ever happen to a 12-year-old who goes into school and shoots up that school, but everybody lives, or he continues to perpetrate sexual assaults on a child in his home or even at school, is that maybe they'll one day have to go into foster care. Like, what am I missing here? Where's the accountability? Where's the prevention?
Well, the accountability is going to be on a case-by-case basis, and that's going to be determined by the collaborative management plan. That's not going to be something that's determined by the family or otherwise. If a juvenile, is a 12 or younger child, is determined to be a threat to the public or a threat to their family, victim or re-victimizing other people, they would be obviously detained. They would be placed in
a... Can't be detained, buddy.
Let me change my verbiage. They would be found, put in a place where there can be a bed available, where they can receive that intensive treatment, whatever that they need to get to evaluate whatever the situation is. But this is simply...
Who has the authority to do that under your bill?
It's going to be under that collaborative management plan.
They don't have the authority to enforce their decisions. I mean, they can't mandate anything happen.
Well, the collaborative management plan can be, they can be worked through the court. This is to take the juvenile out of the court. So the as far as the justice system is concerned, that is where the collaborative management plan works through. But the child themselves are not dragged through the court process to be traumatized by that or otherwise detained to be institutionalized unless that's where that final thing happens. Or, you know, they turn 13 years old and realize, okay, this kid obviously is not attainable at 12 and younger and needs to be introduced to the criminal justice system.
Yeah, but men, we don't institutionalize 10 to 12-year-olds now. We don't do that. And all the stuff that you talked about that's available already exists in terms of the DNN and all that other stuff. I'll give you another example, something I read in the bill, and tell me if this was the intention. If there's a protection order that issued because a 12-year-old is victimizing another person, and it doesn't matter their age, but let's say we've had cases where 12-year-olds have sexually assaulted 6-year-olds. There's a protection order put in place. That kid violates the protection order repeatedly. The court has no authority to detain that student or that 12-year-old or to even find them in contempt and act on the contempt. Was that intended? Like you could just violate the protection order at will without consequences?
No. And I would disagree that there aren't consequences. We don't have those consequences specifically laid out in the bill. That's something that we would have to work through as far as what the collaborative management plan is going to entail for those circumstances.
Man, it feels like this just blows up the juvenile justice system and then tries to rely entirely on a DNN system, a dependency and neglect system that already exists. I mean, I understand the collaborative management board thing, and some jurisdictions have these things, but there's no funding mechanism for them to provide these resources. Of course, the parents aren't going to be able to fund them or provide them, but there's no accountability or no incentive for anyone to cooperate. There's no penalty. If the 12-year-old or their family decide, we're just not going to play ball, there's no enforcement mechanism. That just strikes me as problematic, reckless in a way. Like, I want to see in my mind what you think is going to happen with this. Has there ever been another state that has done something like this?
I don't have that in front of me as far as other states that have successful plans going, but I can just, all that I can speak on to this is that, again, we're talking about 12 and younger. I mean, and as far as 10 and younger, we're raising the age 2 years, but we're adding more of a codified program to it. And rather than, you know, we've had a task force for a year to try to come up with the system behind it. And I think because of the bill last year and the way things were written out last year, there are more entities that are more willing to work against us than with us in making this work. And I know there are counties that have great sex offender diversion programs and stuff like that for youth. If those are working great, why can't we work together to make that something that we can build into the system with Department of Human Services?
Because you blew them up, man. There can't be a diversion program after this. You've blown them up. The DA's office is no longer involved in any part of this. And frankly, that's the other aspect is, why would law enforcement conduct a robust investigation? It can't go anywhere. Can't ever turn into charges. There's no reason for them to get all the evidence. All they need to do is fill out a form where they say there's probable cause. That probable cause determination is reviewed by no one. It's just a form they fill out that says it happens. I mean, there's no judicial review of any of this. I can't see why there would be any diversion program that exists for up to 12-year-olds after this, because they can't bring them into the court system. The other part of this, though, and I don't want people to lose sight of this, your bill isn't just about 10 to 12-year-olds. It fundamentally changes some things for older folks, too. Like 13 to 14-year-olds are now prohibited from any sort of detention except for certain weapons offenses and certain felonies and crimes of violence. So you change that, too. That's 13 to 14-year-olds. And then there's stuff that takes place all the way up to 18-year-olds that limits their ability to be transferred into adult court. Best example I can come up with, Ryan, is 17-year-old who maybe even has a prior conviction for DUI, pours himself behind the wheel, kills people in his car, and slams into another family car, killing them. That dude can't be transferred into adult court. That guy faces 2 years of DYS for killing all those people because he's trapped in the juvenile system. Are these things you intended to exist in this bill, or are they just there, other people put them in, or does this seem like justice?
No, this is just to say that kids 12 to 14 years old can't be charged in the class of 1-2 felonies, crimes of violence, as an adult.
But what about that 17-year-old?
They can be as class of 1-2 felonies, I'm sorry.
Yeah. But not the 17-year-old vehicular homicide guy. That guy is still just going to be treated like a kid.
They're not going to be in adult court. Now, if it's determined to be a class 1 or 2 felony, that's obviously going to be moved to adult court.
Vehicular homicide's a 3. And so all these crimes that don't rise up to the level of a 1 or a 2, how about this? How about even attempted second degree murder? That's an F3. But nonetheless, you're saying that 17 years old in 360 days, no matter what crime that they commit, as long as it's not an F1 or an F2, they're going to be stuck being treated as a kid. I just don't see this bill making us safer. Here's my thought. I like the idea of where it's going, but why not do a pilot program and say, look, we're just going to start with misdemeanors. We're just going to do it in a couple different jurisdictions and see how it goes. Why go so big and so broad so quickly?
Well, first of all, we don't address kids over 14. We're talking about kids 12 and younger, but I mean, still taking that 13 and 14 year old out of the adult system. So the only thing that we're doing in this bill is we're talking about fourth, fifth, and sixth graders. We're talking about little kids. So taking those kids out to where there's a statewide standard where we have kids that are given that chance to succeed later. They're not doing this as adults. They're not doing this as 15, 16, 17, 18-year-olds or older. That recidivism is something we can hopefully stop at the young age of 12 years old. And if not, we're dealing with kids that once they get past that, they're potentially not able to be saved at that point. They might be that adult career criminal or career offender.
How are you going to measure that?
The same way
we're going to measure success.
The same way we're measuring juvenile crime right now.
I know, but yeah. By the way, the bill is not limited to just 14-year-olds. It actually keeps up to 17-year-olds from being ordered to detention for contempt of court, which is usually what happens when they violate protection orders and other orders of the court. They can't even be detained for that now. Why is that important?
Well, I think what we're getting to is these severe or extreme minimal cases, especially those of severe, like heavy felonies. When we're dealing with a lot smaller things where kids are actually being charged with something as innocent as swatting another kid on the butt with a tennis racket and getting charged with a sex offense, what we want to do is direct the focus of the bill to the intent is taking kids that potentially had every level of innocence in mind or just were wrong place, wrong time, hanging out with the wrong kids that aren't being diverted into the criminal justice system.
How do you know that's happening?
I know kids in my personal life that have been charged with that. Things aren't the same way they were when we grew up, when there was a level of innocence that was seen as a level of innocence. It took a village, whereas now there's this personal sense of protection where everyone feels like they need to address something as a crime rather than as something that was just maybe an innocent mistake or something that deserves to be a talking to rather than criminal charges.
Don't do you worry that you have set up a system here that if this becomes law, that in addition to those low-level events, which I presume already DA's offices filter out all the time, that you're going to catch a whole bunch of much worse conduct and much worse kids involved in this? And I guess the final thing, Ryan, I'd ask is why there's something called the Colorado Commission on Criminal and Juvenile Justice. Why didn't this go through that organization before getting dropped?
There were key points to that we're still trying to work out, and I'm hoping we can get them on board before this hits the floor, hits the Senate. But there's certain things when we're trying to collaborate on this bill, even with CDAC, there's certain things that we're trying to compromise on. How would we make this bill more palatable? And when we come up to a point of contention and we talk about addressing it, the goalpost gets moved. So in trying to collaborate, the hardest part for our team is to find those points of contention and address them, because when we address them, there becomes another point of contention that's bigger than that. So I think the compromise we need to be able to sit down at a table and talk about how we can move forward with this to best suit everyone, every kid 12 and younger in the state of Colorado, rather than pointing at the extreme cases that are making this bill look so terrible on a headline, cutting it down into the pieces where this is actually going to be a good thing. I personally don't see this being anything bad or negative that's going to come about with these extreme cases. There's always going to be headlines. We always see headlines of 5-year-olds or 8-year-olds or anything committing horrendous crimes. We're still going to see that. That's the day and age that we live in. But I think finding another way to try and address these problems early on with a different method of mental health focus, I think we can see some sort of metric of success.
I get it. And we're just going to disagree on this one. I mean, look, 1,500 sex offenses by 10 to 12-year-olds over the last decade is not hyperbole, and it's not some histrionic reference to a high-profile case. That's real. That stuff just happens. But there's still time to amend this bill, still time to talk about it. Here's what I'd say. I respect you, man. I really do. I appreciate everything that you bring to the table, and I love that you would come on the radio and have these questions in this conversation, because this bill is troubling to me. But there may be others out there listening who are like, I really like what Ryan has to say, and we'll have that conversation. But, buddy, outside of this, you're doing great work. This is the only bill that I've seen you a part of where I'm like, please don't do this. Please don't do it this way. But I respect you coming on and having the conversation, and we're happy to do it as it moves forward as well. Thank you, Ryan Armagost, representative. By the way, tell folks what part of the state you're in.
I live in Berthoud, and House District 64 is Berthoud, Meade, Johnstown, Milliken, West Greeley, and Northwest Evans.
Yeah,
a little bit of Larimer, a lot of Weld.
Yeah. Hey, man, we'll have you back on in the future. Thanks for the conversation, Ryan. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you.
Hey, that was Representative Ryan Armagost. I am interested to hear your feedback on that and the bill. I have my own take on it, by the way, and I've gone through the bill, and I've talked to some other smart folks who are even smarter than I am about this bill. And I understand the motivation, but I don't think there's any data to support it. It sounds like it's anecdotal at best, and I worry what we're doing to a juvenile justice system that, although far from perfect, has been improved greatly over the past couple decades and can still be improved. But this system and I'll tell you how I think it plays out with a 12-year-old shooter when we come back. But look, stick around. Hit us with the text. You can hit us with the phone calls, too. I'd love to have a conversation with you about what you heard and what you think we ought to do with this. 303-696-1971. What do we do with 10 to 12-year-old criminals? And that's what they are when they violate certain crimes. It's George Brockman on the George Show, 710 KNUS. George Brocker back with you here at 710 KNUS. My thanks to Representative Ryan Armagost from up north there. I like that guy. I liked him when I was supportive of him running for office. I think he is a great voice on a lot of topics under the Gold Dome. But this bill, and I'm sure it's obvious to him as well as to you, I hate this bill. The way this thing is drafted is it takes an idea that's worth exploring and makes it a mandate across the state and blows up a juvenile justice system that actually works and serves a pretty valid purpose. I mean, when you talk about the idea of, hey, we're injecting kids into the system that don't need to be there, or keep in mind these things in the last decade. Only three children age 12 have been committed. That's like being sentenced to prison to have been committed. One of them 10 years ago, 2013. One in 2017 and one in 2019. One child, age 11, has been admitted to a commitment in 2013. That's 10 years ago. That's four, folks. Over 10 years, only four have been committed. That means sentenced. And what that tells you is that the system works to keep kids out of incarceration and tries to rehabilitate them. Now, it's certainly not flawless. It's not perfect. No system is. But we have spent, I've been in this DA game now, criminal justice, going back 28 years. We have fundamentally changed the way we approach juvenile justice. How about this? How about the fact that I think it was 10 or so years ago, I can't remember, maybe it was 15 years ago, we'd filed some incredible number of cases against juveniles, something like 15,000 cases. And that was like every year, 15,000 cases. And as of like last year, we were down below 5,000. That's not because juveniles aren't committing crimes. They still are. It's because we have an approach that seeks to divert them out of incarceration and where possible out of the system and to provide them with the resources and their families necessary to get them back on track. There's no indication that that system is failing enough to want to blow it up. And that's what's happened here. And so here's what's going on. I will tell you exactly how this plays out. According to this bill, 1249, and if you've got a representative out there, Democrat or Republican, you should email them today. 1249 is the number, and say absolutely do not support it in its current form. Here's what would happen under this bill for a 12-year-old that walks into his middle school and shoots teachers, students, it doesn't matter. They all live just like at East High School. The police show up. Yep, they can disarm the kid, that's for sure. But they're not allowed to even temporarily detain that kid unless he's a risk to himself. So there's no arrest. There's no 12-year-old in cuffs. There's no taking him and getting him fingerprinted. None of that takes place. In fact, they can't even forcibly take him somewhere. Police won't have the authority to do that. And then here's the other part. Police have no incentive to conduct a full-blown investigation because there will be no scrutiny of the investigation because it will never, ever, never go to court. So cops show up, they look around, everybody says, yep, that's the kid that did it. Kid says, yep, I'm the one that did it. All they do is fill out a form that says there's probable cause to believe that this kid engaged in attempted murder. That's a big one. And that's all. Can't take them anywhere else. They lack the authority to do it. There will be no juvenile justice intervention. There will be no court sitting in judgment of this kid or even saying, all right, what are we going to do? Well, hey, we want to do this. We don't want to do an out-of-home placement yet, or we do and we want. There's none of that. Instead, the kid and his family are invited, and it's invited because they can't be summoned or compelled to go. There is no mechanism in this law for enforcement of anything. Nothing. So they're invited to a collaborative management board meeting. By the way, the funding for that, we don't know yet. It doesn't exist. They go sit around the table. If they show up and the CMB says, here are the things we think that ought to take place and let's have a conversation, no enforcement mechanism. Here's the kicker. If they do not come to the meeting, do you know what happens? They set another meeting. What? More meetings? And these aren't your easy Zoom meetings. These are in-person meetings, I presume. I don't know if Zoom's available or not. And if they blow off that second meeting, then they go to, wait for it, a third meeting. A third meeting, people. And if those folks who have blown off the first two meetings blow off the third meeting, at that third meeting, there is a discussion with Human Services, not compelling them, but finding out whether or not they want to file a dependency and neglect action. Things they could do already. Nothing new there. That DNN course through the courts that Ryan was talking about, it exists already. There's just no enforcement mechanism. And a DNN action, by the way, has nothing to do with holding the kid accountable. It has to do with holding parents accountable. And at the end of the day, the worst possible outcome from that DNN is kid goes to foster care. Now, raise your hand if you're a foster family. It's like, I would love the untreated repeat offender who's either engaged in violence or sexual assault. But this doesn't just apply to the 12-year-old who shoots up the school. You got a 12-year-old who, for whatever reason, is engaging in incest with his brothers or sisters, or inflicting sexual penetration on a kid at school and continues to do it. Because remember, there's no arrest. They can never be removed. So they, let's say they do it over and over and over again. This bill provides no escalation for that, except that at some point down the road, maybe that kid gets sent to a foster home. That's what this bill does. That scares the crap out of me. They're, protection order. Envision your kid or your grandkid is the victim of some 12-year-old bully, thug, and they exist, folks. Let's not pretend. We can continue to call them children. That's a classification of age, not of their ability to perpetrate evil on someone. They do that, and the court says, well, I'm putting a protection order in. You cannot violate this protection order. You cannot have contact with that victim. You can't keep bullying them or perpetrating on them. This law makes it impossible to enforce, because you know what the consequences are for violating that protection order? Nothing. That's right, nothing. Police can't come and arrest them, because they can't arrest someone who's under 12 unless that person's a risk to themselves. They take them to court. Can the court find them in contempt of their order and then say, here are the consequences? Maybe it's detention. Maybe it's removal from the home in some other capacity. Nope. Can't do that. The only thing the court can say is, I'm super serious. This is really important. Please follow it. And then they violate it again. Same conversation. There is never an escalation. There's no ability for the court to enforce that. And the idea that this bill is just about 10 to 12-year-olds is just flat false. It eliminates the ability to transfer violent and career criminals below the age of 18 into adult court, except for the most aggravated and extreme charges. So this idea that, oh, it doesn't do anything to above age 12, well, then we decided, well, actually, maybe it does, because 13 and 14-year-olds, unless they commit a certain kind of crime, they could never be transferred. 17-year-olds can't be ordered to detention for contempt of court. I don't know, man. I don't know what we're doing here, but this will not, one, achieve any justice. If you're a victim out there, if you're a victim, you get nothing out of this bill. Here's why. Under the current juvenile and criminal justice systems, when you're a victim, you have rights under your constitution, your Colorado constitution, to be informed, to have input. All those are all gone. You get notified there's a meeting, but you can't show up at it. Don't really get to have any meaningful input on it. You can't ask for any accountability. You can go to court and beg the court to keep this 12-year-old thug from continuing to perpetrate on your child, and the court will say, well, I've told him not to do it, and that's the most I can do. That's all I can do. Or maybe they'll go the route of the shooter here at East, and they'll be expelled from school and sent across to another school district that will then have to swallow that. This is misguided. It is not justice. It is not going to be effective. This will create more victims. It will take away more victims' rights. It will encourage more criminality. By the way, if you're a gang member, don't you look at this and say, yay, let's just send all of our 12-year-olds to steal cars, because they can't be held accountable for it. Nothing will happen to them. They could steal a billion cars. It won't matter. Remember the 12-year-old who got shot in Denver? That horrible tragedy? More of that. That's what we're going to have. Or, hey, how about have your 12-year-olds go in and commit burglaries or deal drugs? They can never, ever, never be held accountable for it. They can't be stopped unless they agree to stop by going to these management board meetings and following their unenforceable rules. That's what this bill does. 303-696-1971. That's our number. Is this right? And by the way, Billy asked an important question off the air too, and that is, look, are there folks out there who listen to Ryan and say, you know what? I know of kids who got sucked into the system for nonsense, for garbage. And is this bill an attempt to try to address that? What's the dumbest thing that you've seen somebody sucked into the juvenile justice system for? And conversely, what's the worst thing? I can tell you, man, they commit murders. That's the only crime. If your victim lives, system can't touch a 12-year-old. Only for murder. That's amazing. It's an amazing standard. I've never seen it before anywhere. That's why I asked the question, have you ever seen a bill like this anywhere else in the country? Nope. 303-696-1971. We're going to cut away for a break. Before we do that, I want to tell you about Mitch Floria from the Art of Granite. This guy's the bomb. Mitch has been doing great work in making houses more beautiful than they were before. And if you're interested in staying in your home, it's your dream home. You're not looking to move. Maybe you're unfazed by whatever's going on with the real estate market. That's great. Stay there, but give your house a little bit of a facelift. Maybe this is a little bit of the injection in there that we see so much of these days. Mitch Floria at the Art of Granite can get it done. Now, theartofgranite.com is the website, but don't be fooled by the name, and granite has a T in it. Don't be fooled by the name. He does way more than granite. He does quartz. He does marble. He does fill in the blank. He can do it all. The other thing I would recommend to you, though, is go to his place. Look it up online. His place is at about 6th Avenue in Colfax. One, it's like an amusement park of countertop stuff. And while that sounds silly, it's not. You go in there and you look around, you're like, my God, I had no idea. Look at that. What is that? How do you get that kind of marble? How do you get that kind of man-made, that quartz? This guy is like a magician with this, and he's all about customer service. Here's the proof. You mentioned 710. You mentioned me. You get a deal, and here's the deal. You get the kitchen countertop package. You get the sink for free. If you wanted to do the kitchen and the bathroom, bathroom countertop for free. All you have to do is mention us. This guy's in the business of putting smiles on your faces and making your house even more beautiful. That's Mitch Floria at the Art of Granite, artofgranite.com. When we come back, we're going to get to our phone caller. It's Johnny and everybody else at 303-696-1971. George Brockler, George Show, 710 KNUS. George Brockler back with you here, 710 KNUS. Not a lot of time, and that's a problem for me because I want to have a conversation with Johnny, our caller. I just couldn't give him even a minute, and that's not fair. So here's what we're going to do. Johnny, if you stick, I know you talked to Billy, so whether it's to stay on hold or to call back, I want to have these conversations with you guys. This is an important topic. In the 8 o'clock hour here at the start, we're going to start with a guy named Stephen Tubes. And Stephen is going to be in court today on Dr. Death, Dr. Poison, Dr. I can't remember all the names that people gave him, the doctor from Little Shop of Horrors. We're going to have him on to talk about what I think either is expected or any sort of information on that case. I'm fascinated by it. I'd still love to be a prosecutor on it. It's the girl. I'm the radio guy now. And then we'll get back to the calls on this. Between this and East High School, there's just too much to talk about here. It is clear that our system is failing kids. Put it in the juvenile justice system. So you stick around with us. We'll be back with Stefan right after this. It's George Brockler on The George Show, 710 KNUS.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.